This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Lawmakers will begin their work at the State House today as they gavel in for the first of the 60-day legislative session. That work today will be followed by Governor Jim Justice's first State of the State address tonight, where he will present legislators and the public with his legislative agenda and his plan to balance the 2018 budget. Joining me this morning to discuss today's events at the State House is Ashton Mara. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth.
As we head into this first day of the session, there's obviously one issue that is getting more attention than any other, and that's the state budget.
That's right, Beth. The budget hole for the 2018 fiscal year that will begin in July is projected to be as large as $600 million. And so far, legislative leaders are sticking to the notion that they will not increase taxes and will instead cut the size of state government. Now, that's on top of the $400 million former Governor Earl Ray Tomlin has already cut from state government during his time in office. So if you've been following the budget situation at the State House, then you may know that many state agencies are already struggling. They've testified before lawmakers that continued cuts mean picking and choosing which government service programs are on the chopping block and laying off state workers. But House Speaker Tim Armstead and Senate President Mitch Carmichael have both said that they're prepared to make those tough choices this year.
What areas are likely to see those deep cuts?
I mean, I really think that almost every state agency will see some kind of cut again this year, but we're probably not looking at those across-the-board cuts that Governor Tomlin implemented on several occasions. Mm-hmm. And Beth, we should just mention that West Virginia Public Broadcasting is a state agency and we do receive state dollars. But I think what we're going to see is lawmakers go in with this more fine-tooth combed that they like to talk about, and they'll make those decisions on a more minute level. One thing that I think is very clear, though, is that nothing at this point is off the table. Speaker Armstead told reporters during a briefing last week that public school funding and dollars that go to health and human service programs in the Department of Health and Human Resources can no longer be the quote-unquote sacred cows of state government. Cuts in the state school aid formula, which is what the speaker is talking about, would likely mean county school systems would have to lay off teachers, and cuts in DHHR could mean the loss of federal matching dollars for certain programs.
Well, legislative leaders say they do not want to increase taxes. They have discussed making changes to the current tax system, right?
Right. Both the speaker and the Senate president are interested in essentially reworking the structure of the state's tax code to shift away from a reliance on personal income taxes and put that burden on consumption taxes. So think about things like the consumer sales tax or cigarette taxes, soda taxes. Those are taxes on consumption. That shift, however, would take a lot of work, and I just don't think it's likely at the end of 60 days we're going to see the West Virginia legislature get rid of the income tax. Mm. But what we could see, and what the speaker and president are both adamant that they want to accomplish this session, is closing some of those loopholes in the state state sales tax. And the example they keep using is on professional services. So right now you don't pay a tax on attorneys or accountants' fees, and they say they'll close that loophole, assess that tax, but then they'll drop the overall rate so the entire change is revenue neutral or doesn't create any new dollars for the state. But if you're not creating new dollars, then you're not doing anything to address that $600 million budget gap. Again, they say they'll be looking to cut to make that up.
And Governor Justice will present his ideas on how to close that gap tonight during his State of the State address. What do you expect to hear from him?
You know, when you talk to anybody in the governor's office, you hear them say he's a dreamer, he's a big idea guy, and that's what we're going to get tonight. We've been told that the governor does not intend to read his speech from a teleprompter, which is traditionally done. He'll instead use notes and bullet points, just like he did with his inaugural address. I think we can expect to hear those big ideas and not a whole lot of detail in his speech. My impression of this governor is that he doesn't feel the political pressure that some have in the past. Aside from the Raleigh County Board of Education, he's never really held public office. So now he said on the campaign trail that he doesn't want to raise taxes. He's not going to raise taxes. But I think it's really possible that tonight we get a radical plan from Governor Justice that really tries to shake up government.
A State of the State address is a pep talk. It
yes.
always starts at the legislative session at the beginning, and it's a pep talk. Ashton Mara covers the State House for West Virginia Public Broadcasting and is the host of our program, The Legislature Today, which returns to television and radio on Monday, February 13th. Ashton, thanks so much.
Thank you, Beth.
And West Virginia Public Broadcasting will bring you Governor Jim Justice's State of the State Address tonight at 7 on radio, on television, and online. Immediately following the speech, join Ashton for a special episode of The Legislature Today, live from the Capitol. And our coverage of House and Senate floor sessions begins at noon today on the West Virginia Channel and online. It's been just over a year since the Capitol's new security system was put in place. For decades, nearly all entry doors at the West Virginia State Capitol were open to anyone during business hours. But that changed at the start of the 2016 legislative session after the implementation of two public access checkpoints. As Liz McCormick reports, it's been relatively smooth sailing for the change as it enters into its second year.
Step on through for me, ma'am.
Conversations about more intense security for the public entrances of the state capitol were not new when the Republican majority began to put them in place during the 2015 session. After 9/11, the issue became a serious concern for lawmakers. But with an increased demand for metal detectors and other security equipment across the country, West Virginia's project fell by the wayside. It took more than 10 years to take those plans and make them a reality. That's largely because Capitol security, lawmakers, and visitors alike wanted to make sure new, tightened safety measures wouldn't mar the beauty of the state Capitol building. But some were also concerned the checkpoints would be off-putting for some guests. Lawrence Messina, Assistant Secretary for the Department of Military Affairs and Public Safety, says after 9/11, other security, smaller, less noticeable measures were taken to increase safety on the Capitol grounds, but most doors into the Capitol continued to remain open to anyone. That is until last year.
Essentially, the purpose of this was just to enforce existing law. There is a law that prohibits the carrying of dangerous and deadly weapons onto this campus. This law has been on the books for some time, and this is just another way to enforce it. So it's not as if we really, you know, changed the law or added to the law. It was just a way that we enforced the law, and it was because after these discussions, folks really thought that, you know, given the climate we're in, all these other factors, to really maintain that balance, we should take this step.
The two public checkpoints are no different than if you went into a federal building or to an airport. Visitors simply place anything they're carrying onto a conveyor belt to be scanned while they walk through a metal detector. Messina says at first it did take a little time for some to adjust to the change, but overall it was painless.
What I'm hearing from our officers at the access points is that if they hear something, more often than not, it's how folks are actually grateful that we took this step, because they do feel safer. And maybe it's because of what they're seeing in the news happening elsewhere.
Lieutenant Mark Swecker has been an officer with the Capitol Police since 2011. He says he remembers how open the Capitol was before the new system was put in place, but he agrees with Messina that now it's ultimately better and safer, while still being a relatively open campus.
You would think that people would actually be upset over being inconvenienced or what have you. But actually, we have found the opposite to be true. We have had very few issues. Those issues that we have encountered, we've dealt with. We've made adjustments. We've made accommodations for people.
For Charleston residents Smita and Kirit Pujara, who walk from their home to the Capitol regularly, they agree the new system is a huge positive for both employees and visitors. But there are things Smita says she does miss.
I mean, we can outside, we have no problem. Like, you know, you can walk. On weekends, also sometimes we've come and we've been able to get through. So it's not been a problem. We just wish we could enter the main door sometimes, you know, because that's closed off.
Lawrence Messina says the biggest challenge with the new security system over the past year has been keeping up with its maintenance, but he doesn't anticipate any problems during this legislative session. For the Legislature Today, I'm Liz McCormick.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.